Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
What a great holiday today. This is Christmas Day for many of you out there listening to the program. And on behalf of all of us here at Radio America and at Home and Family Finance, we wish you the happiest of holidays and a very, very joyous new year. I hope it's going to be the best year ever for you. It's been an interesting year, hasn't it? In so many different ways, it has been an interesting year. And here we come to the end of 2016, looking forward toward 2017. And in just a minute, we're going to reflect for our military members. We have over a million military members who are coming out of service after having served their country wherever they might be. And the first portion of this program will be dedicated to talking to them. And by the way, when I say that, I remind you we're talking about our sons and daughters, husbands, fathers, brothers, sisters who serve in the military. So this is not something that is divided over here. They are us and we are they. But I also want to make sure that I remind you about being financially fit, as I do every week, because that's so important. Are you making more than you spend, or are you spending more than you make? And you know the consequences of that if it's the wrong way. And do you have 6 months of survival funds in your account put away? 6 months of adding up all of your expenses every month, putting that total together, and then saving that amount of money, and then doing that 6 times so that you have 6 months if something happens to you or to your income or to the person that brings the dollars in. You guys know you're going to survive for at least 6 months to get your heads together, get your life together, and continue on living the good life. And finally, 3 months of emergency funds. Why emergency funds? Well, this keeps you from dipping into your survival funds. Something always happens to someone we care about. Friend, family, somebody calls and says, I need help. And in the twinkling of an eye, you can go from someone who can help to someone who needs it. So you want to be prepared to help without dipping into your survival funds. That's why you have this 3 months of emergency funds standing by, and you can be helpful in that way. And finally, of course, I think the most important, you are saving, aren't you? 5% of everything you make every day of your life. I hope you are. Put away 5%. Pay yourself. I'd love you to pay 20%, but I know it's difficult. It's easy to say, hard to do. But 5% you can certainly do. And yeah, you may have to sacrifice a movie or popcorn or pizza or something, but put away 5% of everything you make, okay? And if you do that, you're going to thank me. You're going to say things like, God, he's a brilliant man, and I'm glad he's convinced us to do this, because it's going to make your life a lot better and a lot easier when you have need of those funds, and you will have need of those funds. So make sure you are financially fit. That's what we mean when we say financially fit. And as the end of the year approaches here, if you haven't done it, this has got to be your resolution for 2017. I am going to put away 5%. I'm going to have an emergency fund. I'm going to have a survival fund, and we're going to be realistic about it. Okay. Now, getting back to the military and getting back to my a greater part of our audience, as you know, we have the pleasure, the honor of being broadcast on the American broadcast, the American Military Network. Every week, AFN, Armed Forces Network, I said Vietnam because that's where I was, and that's where I listened to this network, by the way. Never knew I'd be sitting here on the other side of the mic one day talking to those in the military, wherever you might be. But for the past year, we have played, I think, an important part in bringing you up to date on the fact that there is white paper that comes out once every so often that is really designed to help our veterans make the transition. We have with us today two people that are going to talk about this last of four papers. And every time the papers have come out, this will be the fourth of four white papers, and they'll tell you where you can catch up on all of this. But Deborah Bradbird is a senior research associate at the Institute for Veterans and military families at Syracuse University. And this is the derivation of these papers. The IVMF is the first interdisciplinary national institute in higher education focused on social, economic, educational, and policy issues affecting veterans and their families post-service, once they finish. J.J. Montero is a certified financial planner with USAA. He has been practicing it for over two decades and earned his bachelor's degree in engineering from the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, served in the U.S. Army for 6 years on active duty, and retired in 2009. Welcome, both of you. Happy holidays to both of you.
Thanks, Paul. Great to be here.
Thank you for having us. Thank you so much.
J.J., what's the importance of these papers from your perspective?
I think they are a big spotlight, Paul, and they really shine a light on issues. They provide ideas, tips that hopefully can be can impact institutions as well as individuals across the military community. And specific for this paper that we're talking about today, of course, it hits at something that's near and dear to my heart, and that's financial readiness and the relation to transition.
Okay. Now this paper is the fourth and final in a series published this year by the IVMF. And again, the IVMF is the Institute for Veterans and Military Families. Deborah, from your perspective, what does this paper deliver to our veterans and explain its importance?
The entire series that you talked about, and this is the fourth in the series, was focused on workforce readiness. Mm-hmm. And as we were thinking about, well, what gets veterans ready for the workplace, we really started to think and talk with USAA and our other partners, and the idea of financial readiness kept coming up. And we know that veterans, when they transition, one of the biggest financial decisions that they make is finding a good job. Well, in order to find a good job, part of that process is being financially ready. We want veterans to be able to choose the job that's going to make them happy, that's going to earn them wealth, that's going to give them financial options in their life. And we don't want them to be in a position where they have to take the first job or the only job that they're offered. And so we started thinking, well, finances are really the thing that gets them to that point.
Boy, is that ever the case. When we come back, Deborah, I want you to come and sum up the other three papers, and then we'll spend the bulk of the time talking about paper number four. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, here on the Radio America Network. Good to be with you on this holiday. We'll be right back with more. Stay with us.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
Here comes Santa Claus.
I love that. I kind of think Santa Claus is the Institute for Veterans and Military Families when it comes to the military. The IVMF and its paperwork here and its suggestions can't be beaten. Deborah Bradbird is with us to talk about. She's Senior Research Associate at the Institute. And then J.J. Montanaro is a certified financial. If you're doing anything on a major scale when it comes to finances, you need professional help. You need someone like JJ, and he's going to tell us a little bit about this fourth paper in just a moment. But first, Deborah, give us a kind of sum up what we've learned so far. What do we know?
We have three papers in the series, as I mentioned earlier, and the first one, we really define what workforce readiness is. And for veterans, we really believe that workforce readiness is that match between the veteran and the employer. So a lot of times we talk about the veteran getting prepared for the mm-hmm. workplace, and that's really important, but we also want the workplace to be prepared for the veteran as well. So that's what we talked about in paper number one. And then the second paper, we talked about the business case for hiring veterans, and we really focused on the skills that veterans learn and acquire as part of the military experience, and how businesses can leverage those skills mm-hmm. once they enter the workplace. And that's really important as we talk about financial readiness, because those skills and those things that you learn precisely because you were in the military are real assets And that's one thing that that veterans can leverage when they go into the workplace.
Sure.
In getting that great job that everybody wants. And then the third paper, we really focused in on some of the research we had collected about that match. And we found that retention, earnings, salaries over time were really impacted by that match. So as, you know, as veterans and employers' desires were more aligned, all of those things that I just mentioned got better. Retention was better. Mm-hmm. Earnings were better. Salaries were better. So that's just a little summary of the three papers before this last one.
Okay. And, J.J., where can we give us the website where we can find all of this information? And in our next segment, we're going to jump right into this fourth paper and what we can look forward to learning from that. Where can our veterans and our businesses and companies learn more and get all this information?
I don't want to mess that up, Paul, because that's really Deborah's area.
Okay.
So I'm going to let her give you the right web address.
Go ahead, Deborah.
Okay. So this is a long one. So it's ivms.syracuse.edu/research/topics/employment/workforce readiness.
Wow. Now, Deborah, can that be shortened? Can somebody go someplace and then kind of go to that, or do they have to do all of that to get the information they want?
You know what? If they just go to ivms.syracuse.edu, there's a tab for research and evaluation, and you can find the series right under that tab.
Okay. And the reason I know how important it is. Being a vet myself, coming out, I didn't have access to this kind of information. And this kind of information is so important. You're not lost out there, but you're still kind of, which way do I go now? What happens next? What about my family? When we come back, JJ will explain the fourth paper and the importance of being financially ready and knowing what you can and do and how to get there. You're listening to Home and Family Finance here on the Radio America Network. I'm your host, Paul Berry. We'll be right back with more. Stay with us. I'm just trying to get you in the mood here, and it is Christmas Day. We have a right to do that on this day, if no other day. I hope you're having a wonderful holiday. I hope you're safe. I hope you're warm. And I hope you're with somebody you care about that you love. Huh? It can't be any better than that. You're listening to HFF Radio here on Radio America. And I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for joining us, and we wish you all such a great holiday. Our program sponsors are the Defense Credit Union Council and CUNA, the Credit Union National Association, and we thank them for their continued support of this program dedicated to making all of us financially fit. A special thank you to the Defense Credit Union Council, Artie Arteaga, and all of the wonderful people that are part of the DCUC. We love them dearly, and we thank them for their continued support over these many years. They bring us to you, and we appreciate that. The Defense Credit Union Council and its member credit unions believe that financial readiness equals mission readiness and supports the efforts of Military Saves in their dedication to improving the financial well-being of our troops. Military Saves is a year-round campaign that seeks to motivate and to support and to encourage military families to save money, to reduce debt, and to build wealth. And again, let me say save money. I can't overemphasize how important that is. As part of the Department of Defense's financial readiness campaign, Military Saves acts as a resource center for information on financial education and counseling. Check out its links to useful websites for military families where they can learn better money management and can find partners who can help military members achieve their financial goals. It's so important. Military Saves. Set a goal, make a plan, save automatically. I invite you to go to militarysaves.org for more information and take the Savers Pledge today. And don't just take the pledge, live the pledge, live the pledge. And you don't have to be in the military to save at all. My guests today are talking about those coming out of the military, transitioning into civilian life, and what they need to know. And that's been part of a very important series done at Syracuse University on behalf of the veterans and military families, the Institute for Veterans and Military Families. My guest, Deborah Bradbard, is Senior Research Associate at the Institute, and J.J. Montanaro, who is a he's a financial planner, certified financial planner. When you look at this paper, what do you see, JJ?
The military saves stuff that you were just talking about was a great segue, because one of the themes in the paper is that transition or financial readiness, both of them or neither of them, is an event. They're both a process.
Mm-hmm.
And too often, I told my son, who's a paratrooper in Alaska right now, that one of the things I always remember about my military service is I always counted down. I was counting down to this PCS, to this assignment.
Right.
I'm here or there. And that's the same way a lot of folks approach transition, when in reality it truly is a process. And to your point earlier, it's one that we really need to plan for. And a lot of the tenets that you talked about are highlighted in the paper. And the one that really I think everybody should take a look at, because it doesn't happen overnight, is the need to have a robust transition fund. You called it perhaps a survival fund.
Mm-hmm.
And Deborah talked about it in terms of being able to create flexibility.
Absolutely.
The first job when you're transitioning out. So I think we can pretty easily talk about 6 to 12 months worth of expenses setting aside for transition. That sounds easy, and I said it in about 2 seconds, but that does not happen overnight. Mm-hmm. And so the planning for transition, frankly, is something that needs to begin, when you sign on the dotted line and enter service.
That's right. If you're saving, you're planning. If you're saving, you're already there. I mean, if you put something aside. But you're right. You can't wait for the last 3 months to put aside 6 months of savings. It just doesn't happen. You just don't have that kind of flexibility. So it's very important. And Deborah, the other thing I want to make sure people understand, that when they go to the website, that this is readable material. I mean, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to go through this to understand it, especially when your life depends on some of the points that are made there, right?
Yeah, and we wrote it in such a way that, you know, it's organized so that you can – there's call-out boxes and pictures and things that highlight the most important points. There's recommendations in the back that people can look at. So, of course, we want everybody to read every word, but if you're not so inclined, it's easy to read just the important part.
All right, and you can get help there, too, if you need more help. They refer you to places that can help you, too, right?
Yeah, we have a whole two whole pages are devoted to resources that we've identified.
Yeah. Hey, JJ, by the way, and my thanks to everybody at Syracuse for putting this effort, making it the first effort. By the way, JJ, when we were counting down, we called it FIGMO. I'll let you figure out what that means, but when I was in service waiting to get out and head to the next location. Thank you both so very much. What a pleasure to have you with us today. We wish you the happiest of holidays. And let's do other things that we can do here on the radio, and I'll be glad to have you with us, okay?
Thanks,
great.
Paul.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. All right, guys. Happy holidays to you. Coming up next, we're going to talk about money. We'll be right back.
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
And, of course, we always appreciate you out there. It doesn't make sense if we're not having you with us in this little trip we take today. And my thanks to Deborah Bradbird and to J.J. Montanaro from USAA regarding the Veterans and Military Families report. Let me just help you with that in case you want to reach out to them and not really sure with a website. Where you want to go is to the go to Syracuse, and at Syracuse you go to the IVMF, and you'll see that's I as in Into, V as in Victor, M as in Mary, F as in Frank. Okay, at Syracuse.com. And from there, you can kind of find your way to the information that you want. But we thank them very much for doing that. Now we're going to turn to another very important company that you will know the moment I say TransUnion. You'll understand they are a major company involved in forecasting in terms of credit, in terms of all of the things that that are associated with that. And we have a special guest today who is talking about the forecast. And this is very important in terms of understanding what is likely to happen. Part of the job of TransUnion and other major companies of their ilk is to kind of give us a sense of what we can expect. On December 14th, they actually had a market forecast. The forecast was released on the 14th, including protections or projections based on expected rate increases of 50 basis points during the next year. The forecast finds that the combination of interest rate increases and the higher participation of subprime borrowers in the consumer lending market will spur delinquency rates increases for auto loans and credit cards. Now, if you're like me, none of that makes any sense until I see the word delinquency. I get that. But we've asked the Senior Director of Research and Consulting, Nidhi Verma. And Nidhi, I hope I said that right. Did I get it right? If I didn't, help me out, would you please?
That was absolutely right.
Okay. Okay. In Chicago today, talking to us about this forecast, the TransUnion's 2017 consumer credit market forecast. Auto loans and credit card delinquency rates are up. What does that mean? Mortgage and consumer loans fare better. Thank you for joining us to talk about this. Is there something in here, anything in here, that we ought to be concerned about as consumers?
First of all, thanks for having me here. And delinquency, what it means for consumers, really refers to the default rate. What we mean by that is how many days past due are you on your payment obligations, on your debt obligations. And when you look at the auto industry, that's 60-plus days past due on an auto loan or a mortgage loan or a personal loan that you may have is really considered a serious delinquency rate.
Okay.
If you haven't paid your mortgage in 60 days or more, that's considered a serious delinquency. For the card side, serious delinquency is 90-plus days. So if you haven't paid your credit card statements as a consumer in 90-plus days, you're considered a seriously delinquent consumer. Mm-hmm. And that's what we mean by delinquency. And why we do that this time of the year, because we want to provide lenders who consumers work with, as well as consumers who are credit active in the lending market, a forecast, a projection into the next year to see what do we expect in terms of delinquencies, both based on the economic foundation that we live in every day, along with where credit access has been. We've seen some changes in the past few years, specifically in the auto and the card side of the industry, and what does that mean for next year? To go into what it means, Paul, for next year, you just mentioned, yes, we're expecting rising delinquency trends in 2017. We're expecting more consumers to be days past due, 90-plus on card, as well as 60-plus on auto loans, higher default rates to be expected.
Wow.
In both those credit markets.
So, Nidhi, why are we expecting – what causes you to say that looking at this point and forecasting, we expect more people are going to be delinquent? How do you know that?
Sure. So we look at a combination of our macroeconomic environment, which you referred earlier on the prime rate, the 25 basis points rate hike that we just saw in mid-December from the Fed, which is really bolstered by a very strong economic foundation. If the Fed feels good about the economy, they will rise interest rates. They're rising it by another 25 basis points. We saw 125 basis points last year at the same time of the year. And we're actually expecting another 25 basis points in 2017 as prime rate rises. Consumers' credit card interest rates rise as well. It puts pressure on consumers in terms of the minimum payment dues or payment obligations they have on their variable rate credit products. That's cards. That could be your personal loan if you have an adjustable rate mortgage. So as consumers feel that pressure from interest rates, specifically on their card side, we're expecting delinquency to rise.
Mm-hmm.
As well as another big major factor is in the last 2.5 years, we've seen more and more subprime consumers open a credit card. I'll give you a quick example. We have about just under 400 million credit card accounts in the United States.
400 million. 400 million.
That's correct.
Wow.
Card accounts. That's right. So consumers carry, you know, about 2.7 average credit cards in their wallet, right?
Mm.
So that leads to, obviously, a lot more cards out there. About 10% of those cards are just under 40 million or so are subprime credit cards. Subprime credit cards, meaning consumers who are, you know, within these score ranges, Vantage score range of 300 to 600, generally speaking, those consumers are the highest rate of delinquencies you know, sometimes struggle with payment obligations. Mm-hmm. And as we've seen that number peak since the end of 2010, that's the highest peak we've observed in Q3 2016 since the end of 2010. That is another major factor that's going to lead to higher delinquencies. But it should not be a surprise. I think the point we want to make is that is a natural consequence. Just a natural consequence of more subprime borrowers.
All right, hold that thought, because I'm going to ask you in terms of, should we be worried? Should we be doing, as consumers, what should we be doing? We'll be right back with more. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
Yeah, I hope this gets you in the mood here for the today and for the rest of the week from now through New Year's Day. I hope you're having fun wherever you might be, enjoying your life, enjoying your family, and taking into account all the things that that you've done in 2016 and what you plan in 2017. Something Nidhi Verma is doing as TransUnion's Senior Director of Research and Consulting. She is taking a look at what we're likely to be doing. What's likely to happen to our credit cards, what's likely to happen with our delinquency, so that we have some sense of where we are and what impact the recent the raise by the Fed, if any, what has that had? What impact should it have or will it have, Nidhi, on what we're doing in 2017?
Yes, yeah, so as we talked about that 25 basis points rise that we saw a week ago from the Fed, as well as what we expect rates to be next year, another 25 basis points. I think there's more anticipation in the market for rates to rise. I think a few things we need to keep in mind is, you know, the impact it has on delinquencies along with where credit access has been. You know, if you look at our history, between 2010 and 2015, we saw 22 straight quarters of decline. That's 22 straight quarters of decline in card delinquencies. And we suddenly started to observe an increase in 2015, which I earlier mentioned was really around more subprime consumers that have entered, which is a moderate increase, which is very natural as lenders provide more access to subprime mm-hmm. consumers. I think what's more important, it's important to know where the trajectory is going to be in 2017 as we get ready to close this year, as we get ourselves prepared for financials for 2017. It is important to know that those rates are rising. But I think it's also important to remember the levels that we've come from as we compare ourselves to some of the worst times in the credit market, mm-hmm. which was the recession years.
Mm-hmm.
If I look at where delinquencies were, Paul, in 2009, we were at a peak of 3% delinquency rate, meaning 3% of U.S. borrowers were delinquent, seriously delinquent on their credit cards back in 2009, third quarter, which was the first quarter we came out of recession.
Right.
We're expecting to end 2017 at about 1.4%. So the good news is that we're much below those levels, which is really, you know, thanks again to what we've seen on the employment picture, which is a much better picture than we've seen in the last 5 or 6 years. We know that median household incomes are also contributing to consumers' health, credit health, that
mm-hmm.
is. So all those are positive forces, and then you have some headwinds from the prime rate that we talked about,
right?
As well as you have it from credit access in the market.
When you take a look then, Nidhi, overall at where we are, when you say, okay, here we are starting 2017, a little bit of increase in the prime rate, delinquencies overall are down, but yet they're rising. Are you optimistic about 2017, about where we're headed? Do you see inflationary signs on the horizon?
For the consumer credit market, Paul, I feel very optimistic. I feel like we're in a very well-functioning credit health for consumers as well as credit markets for lenders. You know, those are two important ingredients in this market is the supply and demand. Demand from consumers is high on the credit side because consumers are feeling good about their homes. Their home values are rising. You know, what does that mean for consumers who have a mortgage in the U.S.? That means for them that they feel more confident paying towards their mortgages. Why I feel optimistic? Because when I look at mortgage delinquency rates, you know, mortgage delinquency, which really was one of the most troublesome markets when we came out, when we were in recession and even when we came out of recession, we saw mortgage serious delinquency rates peak at 7.2% in the beginning of 2010. That's huge. That's a very large portion of U.S. consumers who couldn't pay their mortgages, meaning they can't afford to be in their homes. What we saw coming since then, we saw 23 straight consecutive quarters of decline in delinquency. So we're actually expecting to end that rate at 2.1% in 2017. Why that is the case, it goes back to consumers being employed. It goes back to steady improvements we've seen on the household income, and rising home values is a primary contributor to that strong performance for consumers who have mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
You just feel more confident paying towards a home that you have a value in and you have equity in. And I think those factors, because mortgage is a large market, it does make me feel very optimistic because 2.1%, in my mind, is a very natural, it's a very normal rate of delinquency. And I always joke that, you know, if you don't want delinquency, you should stop lending. But you are going to see some normal, so we're in a very normal range, what one should expect for delinquencies to be in the mortgage market.
Is there any concern or does it indicate anything between where interest rates might be and where delinquency rates are? Does that play in any informal fashion with each other?
Absolutely. Prime rate and where credit performances are highly correlated, and that's what our forecast predicts, that as prime rates rise, we are going to see card delinquencies rise. And I think what consumers need to know in managing their household budget for next year and managing their financials for next year is that if you happen to be a consumer who has a credit card where you revolve your balance, your monthly payment obligation will go up when that rate goes up.
Mm-hmm.
You are going to pay a higher payment, minimum payment due towards those balances that you carry on your card. It doesn't really impact consumers who pay their balance in full, but it does impact consumers who don't pay their balance in full every month because prime rate increase essentially means card rate interest increase as well. So it's really important for consumers to make sure that while those rates will rise, while their forecasted payment obligation will rise with that prime rate increase, Paul, is just continue to make your minimum payment due every month. It's very important because that is a huge driver in their credit score, and it can potentially impact their credit score if they miss those payments.
Okay, so pay on time. Don't be delinquent. And if you can, obviously don't have a balance at all. Interesting, and when we come back, we'll talk more about what 2017 pretends and what the dangers are there, if any. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, here on the Radio America Network. I really do just love this time of the year, and I hope you are enjoying it wherever you may be, having a chance to spend time with family and friends and listen to the Christmas music and the holiday music, however you celebrate. Do so carefully, but do so full and enjoy every moment of it as we head into 2017. We're talking about finances, and we're talking about it in a way, thanks to my guest, that we can all understand as Nitti Vermont takes us through the forecast as they see it at TransUnion. If we want to know more about all of this, where can I send my audience to learn more, Nitti?
Yeah, if you're interested in getting more details about our forecast, you can visit us at www.transunioninsights.com/IIR.
Okay, let's talk about what's in front of all of us, and that is a new administration coming in. Some experienced politicians, some not, but everybody anxious about what's going to happen. Are you anxious? And if so, what makes you so?
I can't really speak so much to what to expect in terms of new regulations and policies from a new administration. I can speak, Paul, to what we expect in terms of the economic conditions to be. I think we're quite grateful that the last 2 to 3 years have been very solid improvements in our economy from an employment perspective, from the fact that wages and salaries are actually finally rising, which actually gave the Fed more confidence to raise interest rates. Interest rates don't rise in a downward cycle of an economy. Interest rates rise when we're doing well as an economy. And I think consumers should know, the borrowers who are in this credit market should know that interest rate rises do not work in a vacuum. They work in combination with some of the economic forces that are very positive for our economy, such as the employment, the labor health, income gains, and so on.
Does it make a difference? Do we know enough about what people want to do coming in that we can have some sense of where we may end up here in 2017 or which way we're headed? Do we know enough at this point?
I'm not able to comment on what policies to expect, but coming back to the consumer lending market itself and, looking at the supply and demand of the market, we don't really expect that to change much, primarily due to the fact that we're living in a very well-functioning credit market right now. As I mentioned earlier, we saw huge peaks in mortgage as well as car delinquencies 6 years ago, 7 years ago. In the environment that we're in right now, we're still operating under very manageable low levels of delinquency. And, and you may say, maybe, why do delinquencies matter when I'm trying to talk about policy? It matters because it is a huge indicator of the credit health of consumers in the United States. And credit health is correlated to, hugely dependent on and influenced, and in fact bolstered by the strong economy and the forces that we live in.
So I'm hearing an audience, some of my audience saying right now, well, at the end of the day, Nettie, is this a good time or not a good time to buy a car? And can I make any determinations based on your forecast?
If you are a borrower who needs a car to go to work and who has credit needs to buy a car and finance a car, I think from an interest rate perspective, we're still amongst one of the lowest points since 1985. So it's really still a good time to take advantage of those interest rates. And if you are able to make those payments, you're able to accommodate those payments in your household budget, just be mindful of that. You know, we always advocate consumers not to overstretch, overextend their payment obligations, because that really can lead to, impacts on your credit scores. And if at any point, I would say, you're going to miss that payment, whether it be because you just took a new payment obligation on a new car or because your prime rate rose on your credit cards, instead of missing a payment, which is really not the best way to tell your lender of a potential problem you have, just pick up the phone and talk to them to work out a possible arrangement. Lenders are very open to working with consumers to make sure they're not missing their payment obligations. So going back to your point on auto, I think it's still a pretty strong market. We're expecting, growth in the auto finance market next year with the result that consumers have more confidence borrowing.
Well, you've been a very strong guest in terms of explaining this, and I appreciate it. I know we have our concerns about inflation, and we have our concerns about what we don't know, but I guess overall, from what I'm hearing you say, this is not a bad time to be an American and to invest in the market if you want a car or even a home, as long as you can keep your payments and you can stay out of delinquency. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Nettie, so much for joining us here on Home and Family Finance. We wish you the greatest holiday period and then a great 2017, and come back and see us in the year, would you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thanks for having me here, and have a great holiday season ahead.
Thank you so much. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. My engineer, Al Peterson. Thank you so much, Al. Tally Berry, wherever you may be in the world. And we hope to see you again next year.